If we read the apocalyptic language, or listen to the apocalyptic language from Daniel and from Mark there, many of us might feel perhaps even a little frightened when we hear that strong, colourful language. And I would hope in this homily to remove that fear, because we are Christian and we have nothing to be frightened of. But that is a real problem for a lot of people when it comes to the subject of death. The church focuses more heavily at this time of the year on the subject of death, because next weekend we finish the church's year. So it's on the end things. And then we start in Advent, of course, a new church year under the Gospel of Luke next year. So we finish with the green this week, and then we'll have white for Feast of Christ the Universal King, and then we begin Advent in purple. So the church has created the opportunity for us to reflect, as it were, not just on our year, but on our life. So for some people, for example, when I visit them in hospital, or I know that someone's been ill, I'm a little bit curious when people say to me, I'll say, how are you? And I don't often say that in hospital, by the way, because people in hospital will then start telling you how they are. And then before too long, you're looking at scars and you've got the whole story. But no, seriously, when I say to people, how are you? They might often respond by saying things, well, it's better than the alternative. Some of you here tonight may have actually said that yourselves. Well, this is better than the alternative. The alternative for a Christian is spectacular. So that's a rather foolish thing to say, or it's the thing that belongs to somebody who has got a weakness or a trepidation in their faith. And there are times in all of our lives when we do have that, and death is one of those times that is, because it is so confronting and so final as we understand it here on earth, we don't quite know where to go with it a lot of time. And sometimes, as many of you would know, it is fear and the immensity of the mystery that makes us or allows us to say things that we wouldn't normally say if we had given a little bit more time and thought to the issue. But as I look at you all here this evening, you've had plenty of time to think about the issue. A couple back in the corner back there in uniforms, no, they've only just begun. But for the rest of us, the issue of our finality, the issue of our death, is very much in front of us. Now, Daniel, in the first reading, he uses what I said was apocalyptic language, and that just simply means language that is revealing. So what does it reveal? Because Jesus adopts it and language from Isaiah as well, and uses the same imagery. Talks about the stars falling from heaven, etc., etc., and the darkness. Daniel's literature was written between 167 and 164 years before Christ was born. And at that particular time, Jerusalem was being persecuted again. So the language reflects what is actually happening in the here and now for Daniel's community. And that was a great persecution, and there was more to come. In Jesus, in the Gospel, Mark's written that about 63, 65 years after Jesus was born. So around about 35 years, 30 years after Jesus died, thereabouts. But not before. He wrote his Gospel before the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, which occurred in 70 AD. So what's the calamity that he is alluding to in the language and that Daniel is alluding to? The calamity for Daniel was, and there are several theories, but the most plausible, it seems to me, was that the zealots, so these religious zealots, had come into the temple, which was the heart of Judaism. It represented the centre of the universe. They had come in there, they actually stormed the temple, threw out the priests, and put their own priests in there. And that was part of the calamity that was going on at that time. Now, you might think, well, that's okay, that's just the temple and what's going on there. In the temple, the curtain, the veil of the temple was hand-sewn with stars. It was hand-sewn with the five planets that they were aware of at that time, and it was hand-sewn with the sun and the moon. They were ripped down. They were completely ripped down in this torment. So Daniel's literature and the language that he's using reflects exactly what happened in the heart of their universe, this turmoil. For Jesus, he does not know the day or the hour of his death, his passion and death and resurrection. He does not know. He knows that that is the possibility, that this sacrifice will need to be made. But he doesn't know when. Only the Father knows. So we all have that much in common with Jesus ourselves. We don't know when, but he uses the parable of a fig tree and he says, but we've got to look at the signs. And the signs for Jesus were the same as they were for Daniel. Things were being turned upside down. Now, in the Jewish culture of Jesus' time, there were two institutions, and everything else was plugged into them. Those two institutions were family or family connection, the family grouping, the wider family, and the second institution was politics. So things like religion, education, social services, any other institution, they were connected to either family or politics, and quite often both. When Daniel uses the word temple, he's referring to the heart of Judaism that is being turned upside down. When Jesus uses the word temple, he is referring to his body. His death and resurrection ends, it is the destruction of the old law. So it coincides with what's going to happen down the track, but they didn't know that. Because he says, within this generation, you will have experienced this destruction. And he was referring to himself, not the world opening up and swallowing everybody. No, not that sort of drama that people get in their mind. He was referring to himself, the destruction of himself as the temple. The same word for temple is used by the Hebrews as the word for palace. So you've got the domestic front and you've got the political front, the family grouping and the political grouping. And the destruction of the palace and the destruction of the temple coincide in Jesus. And it is the beginning of the new era. Now, when he says, I mean, Mark's community, they were all waiting for this to happen. They were looking at, well, they wouldn't have had watches, would they? But they were looking and thinking, oh, is this going to happen? Like, is it tonight? And when's it going to happen? They would have been very, very keen and anxious, I would suspect. And that is reflected in the writings. But a generation for the Hebrew people was 40 years. So Jesus was about 30 years of age. Now, he was in the latter part of his life. And the paleontologists who look at disease in ancient peoples and stuff, paleopathology it's called, can tell us how well people were in that part of the world at that time. And to get to 40 years of age was fairly remarkable. So Jesus was already, by statistics, in the latter part of his life, and now he was only in his early 30s. Most of his followers, therefore, were younger than he was. Therefore, they are the generation who will witness the destruction of the temple. That is physically when Titus destroyed the temple in Jerusalem again, certainly. But more importantly, that generation are going to witness the passion and the death and the resurrection of Jesus. That's that generation. So try not to think in terms of the second coming. Is it, I hope it I hope it doesn't come just yet because I haven't paid off my MasterCard, or I've nearly finished this Netflix series. Can we just wait? Don't think in terms of that. The scriptures were written to wisen up the immediate audience and for them to pass this message on. Look at ourselves as the fig tree, if you like, and the signs are all there. Our life is passing away. And so we need to reflect on what am I doing with it. If it is fear that is motivating me to stay alive, that's a terrible way to live our life. And Christians don't need to do that. We have nothing to be fearful of. Nothing at all. Paul puts it in many of his letters, particularly Romans, that, you know, oh, I don't want to be in this body, I just want to be with God. And I don't want you going away from here tonight saying, oh, it's all right if I just die tonight, that's great. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is that we do not need to be fearful of our death, but we do need to look at the signs, like the fig tree. When it starts to blossom, we know that summer is coming. So we look at ourselves, we look at our body. When the hair starts turning grey and the hair starts falling out, or whatever happens to women, you know better than I do, that the signs are all there. And it's not about blossoming as we get older. I see the photos that people put up at funerals, and they quite often start off with the beginning of life. And you should see them when they're little kids and they've got mum and dad in their wedding photo, and then they've been married for 60 years, and you should see the difference between their wedding photo and the end. The signs unfold all the way through. And it's okay to have a bit of a giggle about it too. I mean, I've got, as you know, five older brothers, therefore five sister-in-laws. And I was at all of their weddings, and I've seen shoulder pads come and go and hair come and go as well. You know, all of those bridal photos. We are all going to get old. Death will be there for us, greeting us. But we do not need to be fearful. Why I think we are fearful is because our life is actually very good. You may think, I know there are people who are so negative, but our life is actually really, really good. Some people have an awful existence, but for us, I think we have a really good life, and that's hard to let go of. And the other thing that makes death so difficult for us, in my view, is that we love so much. Not the things, we love our people, those who are dear and near to us, so much that we don't want to let them go. And that's really hard. That's very challenging when we are confronted with that. But we have plenty of time because of our faith to prepare ourselves for that confrontation. But don't let that confrontation be driven by fear. Let it be driven by faith. Because we are people who believe. And that's what Christians do. We drive by faith.